Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I said yes, a good Tuesday morning, just in case you forgot. It's not Monday, it's Tuesday. Yeah, a lot of people are going to forget that, including myself, I'm sure, as we go through this week. We'll be off a day. Hope everybody had a great Labor Day weekend. We're back at it today. Lots of things to get into. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville, and Chase McCabe is out on the west side in Bellevue, while Elijah Campbell is holding things down at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Another beautiful day.
It is.
It's game week. We got football week.
Could you say that again one more time?
NFL
say that out loud.
Opening week.
Wow. Been waiting for those words.
It's here.
It is here.
And I got to say, I give them full credit because to this point, knock on wood, there hasn't been a story of, hey, really having trouble getting guys on the field, et cetera, right? It's guy here, guy there. There's a few. But they have avoided the big concern that I think all of us had a few months ago is could they pull this off? So far, they put themselves in really good position.
Mm-hmm.
Where to the point of, when you flip around and watch the preview shows, nobody's even talking about that, which is to their credit.
True. Very true. I mean, really, for the most part, can you think of something? I mean, there's been, don't get me wrong, there's been hiccups. There's been speed bumps.
Oh, yeah.
Cancellation, but everything that has started back up, I mean, nothing has gone away.
Well, I'm talking about this. The NFL, though, has had no reason to believe there'll be a shutdown.
No, I understand.
College football is having a lot more issues, as we knew when you're talking about college dorm life and all the challenges that go with that. I'm specifically talking NFL, how their testing discipline. You know, we have the story here or there, the guy trying to sneak the girl in. You know, so and so goes to a party here. There's a couple of those, but not very many. Really,
here,
they've done a pretty good job.
Isaiah Wilson can't stay off the COVID reserve list. You have that.
I'm losing count.
But that's one.
No, but yeah. he's been there a couple times now.
Oh, yeah. There's individuals here and there, but it has not been a league-wide problem.
No, I understand what you're saying. So,
yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing, because what you're saying is spot on. I'm saying, you know, I suspect they're going to have their season. Everything that has started up and has been going, they're planning on finishing everything. Is there anything to our knowledge that isn't going to be finished? Answer is no. So I expect the NFL they're going to have their season and they're going to get through their season. But to your point, they don't have a hub city. They don't have a bubble situation. And yet it looks like, and quite honestly, while colleges have had issues, like you said, there's also lots of reports out there of all the testing that they've done, and they're coming back with hardly anything. I mean, it wasn't just Penn State. I've seen others come out and say, hey, we've tested our athletes 250 times or whatever, and we have three positive tests or one positive test. I mean, there are those stories as well.
Knock on wood. So far, there's a lot of positive signs. A lot of positive signs. And it's going to take continued discipline to keep doing it. You can't let your guard down, because all it takes is doing that and you could put yourself or your team in trouble. But I think people are, you know, I think we discussed this part of it during the restart of the hockey when we were in the arena freezing, Darren, at the top watching the scrimmages. That when we're talking about high school football and college football and pro, that my theory was that each passing week and month, more and more people get with the program. Even though the opposition is loud, there'll still be that cross-section of people that just say, I'm not going to comply for whatever reason. But there, I think there are more and more people that are in the routine. I'm living with it. This is what I know I can do. This is what I've my own experience has been. And I think that rubs off on more and more people, right? So I think that's helping a little bit. That's just a theory. We just understand the fight better than we did a few months ago, and hopefully that will continue to trend that way.
Yeah, that's why I've been, and I once again, I agree with what you're saying, and which is why I've kept saying I think everybody should at least try. I mean, that's what I don't really have a tolerance for, is not trying. And if you try and it doesn't work, then I understand. Then you say, okay, it just we gave it a go, and it just we couldn't make it work. Okay, everybody understands that. I don't understand, you know, the Big Ten not trying. I don't understand the Pac-12 not trying. I'm watching BYU at Navy play a college football game last night, albeit a sorry college football game, and I didn't last for a very long time because it was so lopsided. But nonetheless, teams are playing. So you can play college football. We've already been watching college football games. And so you can do it. You can try to do it. And that's probably been my biggest disappointment is Metro, Nashville, high school. Like, high school football games continue to be played on Friday nights. You can do it. You can try to do it. And, you know, my biggest beef is the not trying part is, to me, just unacceptable.
I feel the same way. I mean, we've been very outspoken on that of if you have examples, because I can remember a conversation we had probably 3-4 months ago when baseball had one of their early, it came out one of their, you know, their early proposals of trying to, you know, to come back that, all right, well, now you have the Korean League that, okay, this is what they're doing. So you have a model. Well, there are all these models that show you that it's working and they have protocols in place and they can do it. And yet you still have some entities, Metro High School Football, Big Ten, Pac-12, that are going, nah, we're going to sit it out. I just can't agree with that.
Well, we still have to wait a few more weeks before we really feel good about everything. But I agree. It's, you know, we haven't. I would love to see some data, if anybody has done some, and I hope somebody has, of all the high school football that's been played. Has anybody followed up? Like, I know we haven't seen any. Like, I would think if there was something really bad, somebody would be reporting it on the news. Haven't seen anything like that. But, you know, I don't know what the follow-up has been. How many – some teams have played as many as 3 games now. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, has there been a follow-up? Because I would think if you're Metro, you'd want to know that, right? I don't think there's been some meltdown that has happened, right? We would know if that was the case.
I doubt
even
that
though
would be top secret.
We also know that they're not testing on the, right, on the level that the like the pro football guys, when they enter the facility every day, they're getting tested either every day or every other day. So we know that's not the case. So there's very good chance that somewhere along the line there's people that are asymptomatic walking around. But, you know, so far we haven't had anything that has people going, oh my gosh, I can't believe we did this. This was a mistake. You know, so far we're okay. And so I hope that continues. And I hope people, as I said, don't let their guard down because of that. Right? Don't get more lax. Stay with the protocols that are helping us get through this.
The Islanders forgot that they had a game yesterday, game one of the Eastern Conference Final. Wow. That was just a kaboom by the Lightning. I wasn't sure how the Lightning would respond. They've been sitting there in the bubble, probably bored out of their minds for a good while, waiting for their series to start up. So I wondered how that would affect them. No Stamkos for the series. They do get Kucherov back. And, man, did they pour it on the Isles last night. Man, that was unbelievable to see a team that has been so responsible. The defensive end has been so difficult to get anything. And, you know, I guess you got to give credit to Tampa. They just made everything work for them. They were efficient, and they put on a clinic last night. 8-2 they take game one. Meanwhile, game one in the Western Conference Final was a 1-0 game. The goal scored, what, 2 minutes into the game, and that was it.
Yeah, Dallas continues this magical ride. I was a little worried about the Islanders last night, and the reason was they played a lot of hockey, right? Even though they sort of breezed through their first round, they still had to play four games, right? But before, and I realize Tampa played the round robin, but not the same intensity. The other part of it is when Tampa gets going, they've done this in the regular season many times. They can get to a level where they just blow you right out of the water. And that's what happened last night. And the Islanders hadn't had a game like that. They've contained everybody. They've contained some great teams, Washington and then Philadelphia to a large degree. But, I don't know. They were sort of due to have a game like that. I'm really – this is going to be an intriguing second game. Well, but Tampa does that to teams. Tampa has game. If you look at the regular season, they can put up eight on you.
Right.
They have that kind of firepower.
Now you just have to see the response by the Islanders. And because, how many times do you see, a game like this that's so lopsided and the team that scores, in this case, eight goals, maybe they get a little complacent and the Islanders bounce back on them. That certainly can happen. But you obviously have to crumple this one up and throw it in the trash, and there's really not much you can take away from it. Now you just got to move on to game two. I turned it off. I watched probably the first – half of it, and then once it started to get away from him, I'm like, all right.
Lived for the first time, I watched more NBA than I have to this point, because the college football game was a total clunker. I watched a little bit of the Bill Belichick interview, which I think they wanted to keep him the whole entire second half, and I wanted to see if anything came out. I was like, nothing to see or hear here. And the hockey game was complete domination. So I watched more NBA than I have, even though the first game wasn't very competitive. The second game was, and between the Clippers and the Nuggets. So I watched more of that than I've watched any NBA to this point, just because everything else was clunker city.
Yeah, I watched a good amount of NBA this weekend too. Just, it's nice to, and I know we've had this for a little bit, but there's so many options now. You can flip around, and there's some football. There's NBA. There's hockey. There's baseball. So there's soccer. So I've kind of done a lot of that. So just taking it all in after months of not being able to do that. And there's some NFL news here in our city that happened over the weekend. So that was good.
It's finally over. It's finally, that story has finally got a conclusion. It actually has an ending. And so we'll talk about the ending to that question, that storyline that has been out there for months on end. We'll bring in Jim Wyatt. We'll talk about what the Titans did over the weekend, the cuts, as they get ready for their regular season, which is 6 days away. It'll be Monday Night Football in Denver, as we sit here on this Tuesday. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Uptown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bums, 42nd Street got Big Jim, a walker here, bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he began.
We'll learn a little bit more about the Denver Broncos. That'll be the opponent of the Titans 6 days from now on Monday Night Football. We'll go out there and find out what life is like for Denver going into this season. We'll do that coming up at 11 o'clock. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, we now talk about the home team, the team that will start out their season on the road. They'll have one home game the month of September, and then we'll see if they're allowed to have fans in the stands in Nissan Stadium beginning in October when the Pittsburgh Steelers come to town. Jim Wyatt covers them, TennesseeTitans.com. Jim, Jadeveon Clowney, the story is finally over. The questions can be asked, and there's actually a conclusion. There's actually an ending to the questions. He's finally landed here. What did you make of it?
Well, certainly a big development for the team. And, John Robinson, Mike Vrabel, neither one of those guys made a secret that this is a guy that they wanted. I think we've all been talking about this since April. And a lot, most of this was in Jadeveon Clowney's hands, and it was up to what he wanted to do. And so the fact that the Titans got him, and to see, you know, some of the moves that teams like the Saints and maybe the Ravens and other teams in Seattle, I know, was monitoring, to see that so many other people were after them just shows you what kind of player this guy is. And I think even though you look at the stats from last year, you know, and the three sacks don't jump off the page at you, but he disrupts the game in so many ways. And so bringing him in, he's himself will be a game wrecker, but he's going to allow, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry, guys in the secondary to be so much better. And he's going to be a guy that, you know, opposing offenses have not will have to game plan for each week. It's been a long time since a guy, since the Titans had a guy like this. And certainly it's exciting news as we're getting close to kicking off the 2020 NFL season.
Because he got here just over a week away from the start of their regular season and has done nothing with them, how do you think this will affect his playing time, or will it, early on?
I mean, I that question was asked yesterday, and then that question was debated on whether it should have been asked last night. You know, I personally, and again, I haven't seen practice. I don't know what kind of shape he's in. I'm assuming he's kept himself in good shape. But I'm certainly expecting him to play in the opener. I mean, you don't bring a guy like this in and let him sit. I mean, I don't know that he plays certainly as much as he will end up playing as the season goes on. But, you know, I'd expect to see him in uniform. And just having him out there again is going to impact the game. And I think as the season goes on, he'll be more comfortable in the defense, be better off from a conditioning standpoint, and be even more disruptive as the games keep going. But I would think you're going to have 99 out there and, you know, in Denver on Monday night.
I realize the regular season was just around the corner, so it may be the obvious answer to the question, but what do you think changed? Well, I mean, it obviously felt like last week at some point that there was going to be a finality to this long drawn out storyline of Jadeveon Clowney and where would he land. It felt like closure was coming, but why do you think in the end it finally happened? What do you think changed behind the scenes? And I'm just obviously asking your opinion.
Well, I just think that, you know, he probably, I mean, I got the sense through all this that he was not that interested in being in training camp somewhere and that he was going to be patient with this. You could kind of see that through his actions. And I think this was always going to be the time frame this was going to get done, because with this testing protocol and being able to get in a building and start to work for a week one opponent, pretty much, you know, he took it down to the very last minute. And I think he realized, hey, if I'm going to be somewhere, you know, I've got to move. And I think he entertained other offers, certainly. You know, teams tried to get pretty creative and trying different ways to land him. And I think ultimately, you know, his familiarity with Mike Vrabel, Shane Bowen, and Jonathan Joseph, his teammate with the Texans, the AFC South, you know, the South in general. I mean, he's a guy who went to school at South Carolina, grew up in the South. I just think all that, when it came time for the decision to be made, it made the most sense for him. And the Titans are also a team that needs him. I mean, I think you go to different places and they've got different marquee players there. Not to say this team doesn't, but he immediately becomes the face of the defense, even though, you know, this team has had some difference makers, you know, and it's going to have some difference makers, whether that's Kevin Byard, who was elected captain for the second year in a row, or Rashawn Evans, who led this team in tackles last year, Daquan Jones, another captain voted by the team yesterday, Jeffrey Simmons, a first-round pick. I mean, this team has, I think, 7 first-round picks that are going to be on this defense this year. But Clowney is in a category that sets him apart from other people just because of his Pro Bowl trips and because of being the first overall pick of the draft. I think he knows now that he's coming to a place where they're thrilled to have him, and he has a chance to make a big difference.
What do you think is realistic of one? This is kind of a two-part question. What is realistic to expect from him this year? And what do you think they're really – how do you think they're going to use him, and what are they trying to get out of him? And what I mean by that is I think it'd be unrealistic to say, hey, he should have 14 sacks this year. Well, that's – it could happen. It's never happened, you know, since he's been a pro, so I don't know why you would think it's going to start this year. But what do you think – how do you think they're planning on using him? What do you think that they want to really accomplish by having him in the lineup?
Yeah, and I when I look at him and start thinking about expectations and stats, you know, I don't necessarily look and say, okay, this guy's going to be a double-digit sack guy. Like you said, Darren, I mean, he might, but I think you know he has a chance to influence the defense in so many different ways that go beyond his own personal stats. Because, you know, again, I think you have to account for him, and that's going to free up other guys to make plays. I think he's going to have a lot of tackles in the backfield. I think he's going to have quarterback pressures. I think he's going to be quarterback on the ground. I think he's going to certainly be good against a run, something he's done so well throughout the course of his career. And I think they're going to use him in a number of different ways. I mean, he's listed as an outside linebacker. I think he'll stand up on some plays. I think he'll have his hand in the dirt on other plays. I think he'll be lined up in the middle. I think he'll be lined up on the edge. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they end up doing with him. And this is not a new toy that all of a sudden, okay, now you have to figure out how to use him. I think that's where Titans benefit here is that Mike Vrabel has worked with him before. I mean, he knows his strengths. He knows how to get the most out of him. And I think Clowney realizes that as well. I mean, this is a guy he's had success with in the past. And he's coming into a situation where everybody kind of knows going in what things could look like.
Talking to Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com, 1 week away from the opener for the Tennessee Titans. And, Jim, now that they've got that settled, here's a question. Isaiah Wilson and the new designation that you have this year with the COVID list, what are the options for him? What do you think the plan is for him now to try to continue his development, knowing that it's going to be a little bit more of a timetable now and not day one starter?
Yeah, I mean, I think for him, it's just going to be to continue to try to get yourself back in good shape, back in good condition, get good from a health standpoint. When he got put on the COVID reserve list at the start of camp, you know, not only do you have to deal with that and what went with that, but then you come back and you're behind everybody else. And this is a guy that, you know, he's a huge young man, didn't have a chance to work in the OTAs and the off-season program and the mini camp, really probably didn't get anywhere close to where he needed to be from a conditioning standpoint. So I think when I watched him, and I've heard people call him a bust, and I've heard people just really be overly critical of him. Now, obviously you want your first-round pick to make an impact right out of the gate, but I will say when they drafted him, I didn't say this is a guy that's going to be a week one starter. I thought it was always going to require patience. I think Dennis Kelly was going to be this team's right tackle from the very beginning, and that's what's going to end up happening. But I think Isaiah Wilson still is the future right tackle. This team is just going to take him time. I mean, he's just going to have to settle in. You know, this had nothing to do with him going to a party and you know, getting the disease and putting himself in danger again. I mean, that's a whole different topic. This is more about now him trying to get himself back in a good place from a health standpoint. There's a lot of different facets that go with that COVID reserve list, you know, that you have to consider when a guy goes on there. So he's back on there again, and I think now it's just a matter for him, a matter of him getting his health right where he can be a contributor in some form this season. And he's going to be a contributor in the years to come.
Jim, I think all of us have been won over by Dennis Kelly, his professionalism, his versatility. Now that he is entrenched in the starter, I don't think anybody's worried about the job he can do there. But now, who is the next guy? What does it do to not have his utility presence that you can plug in several other spots? Who is who are the next guys up if somebody gets hurt?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tackle, Tyson Breo, they got from the Falcons is obviously a guy who has experience and, you know, a guy that I would expect to – I mean, just based on the rotation in camp and you know, looking at the depth chart that was put out yesterday, I mean, I think he's a guy that you obviously got to consider there. You know, they're heavy at tackle right now, but Sombrero is one of the guys who would be in the mix, and I think right now he's listed as the number two tackle behind both Kelly and Lawan. So if something should happen in game, you know, I think he's your guy, and then, you know, you potentially look at maybe moving some other guys in if you have two injuries at that spot. But that's your number two tackle at this point.
Talking to Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com about the final 53 that it came out over the weekend. So do you think that Trevor Siemian being on the practice squad is more of a, because of the unique rules this year because of COVID, is it A, more of a chance that he can practice, he can learn the offense, he's not rushed into things, and it's also you got that veteran starter that's done it before that's on your practice squad in case something happens?
Yeah, I think it's – I mean, we obviously know this is a guy that has experience and has played in games before, and, you know, he is kind of familiar with what game day looks like. And when he brought in, I think a lot of people assumed that he would be the number two, and I understand that. But after watching practices since, you know, he was here – And I'm including Logan Woodside's performance this mix. I was surprised when I saw a lot of people doing roster projections that they had Siemian as the two and Woodside as the odd man out. I'm complimenting Woodside there as well, because I thought he stepped up his play. I think from the very beginning, I think he's done a solid job. Yes, he had some days where he was a little shaky, but more times than not, I thought he practiced well, and I thought he won the number two job. I think with Siemian, I just think he needs more time maybe this offense, and I think this is a year where, you know, you've got to protect yourself. And we saw that what the Eagles have done to McCown. I mean, they've signed a quarterback just to have him on standby, living down 1,200 miles away on the practice squad just to have them ready. I think with Siemian, I think the Titans just wanted to have an extra guy in the building at practices, getting more up to speed with what's going to be asked of him here. And then and now this team will have options moving forward. And, you know, you can't forget, you know, Woodside has never played in an NFL regular season game. So, you know, last year when something happened to Mariota, Titans had a guy in Tannehill that was ready to step in, and we all kind of know how that went. I think now you've got to give yourself a little bit extra security with a guy who's done it before.
Jim, for a good chunk of last year, the tight end core, because Delanie Walker was hurt, it was Jonnu Smith, Michael Pruitt, and Anthony Firkser, and they all three returned. But Jeff Swaim was another signing during camp, spent a little time with the Cowboys, has been around the league. He makes the 53. What do you see the role being for him? Is it more special teams, or could we possibly see him in some packages?
Maybe in some packages. I still see him as the true fourth, just because I think Firkser gives you something from a receiving standpoint that's different than all those other guys. And I think Michael Pruitt behind both Jonnu and Firkser is a really solid blocker who will be on the field himself. I think Swaim was just such a big physical guy. I noticed him a lot in practices when he got here. That's such an important position for the Titans that I just think that they just felt like when they looked at the 53 and the 16, you got to consider the practice squad, that he was just too valuable to let go. And if they would have released him, then maybe that's a somebody gobbles him up. So, I think the roster is going to be fluid during the course this year, because you can use the practice squad differently. You know, this season, I think you're going to see guys maybe moving back and forth through there throughout the season. But I think for now, when it came down time to get down to 53, I just think he was, you know, he was better than what would have been an extra guy in a secondary, an extra guy at linebacker, an extra guy at maybe another position.
We certainly see some new faces on this 53-man roster, of course, Clowney being the biggest one. But do you think some of the guys that, like a Cody Hollister that made the team, that was around last year on the practice squad, I even think he was on the club at one point, but Will Compton, who was brought back, that is very familiar, because of the lack of off-season work that these guys have had, do you think that some people that were familiar with what Vrabel and company like to do, that that gave them a little bit of an edge to make the 53?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I think we knew going in that the undrafted guys were kind of going to be facing an uphill climb to try to make the roster. And that doesn't mean you can't make it. Aaron Brewer, backup tackle, made it. Chris Jackson obviously was a late round pick, a seventh round pick, that, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, have a tough time sticking. I think he did enough in camp where he's one of those young guys that just showed up so much promise that you just couldn't let him get away. But I do think that having guys that are familiar and having veterans on the roster, I think that was a premium during an off season where that was just so different. And I think Swaim fits in that category. I think, you know, Compton fits in that category. I think, you know, Sonoris Perry fits into that category. I just think, you know, I think Chris Milton, who was re-signed late, I think he's another guy that kind of fits into that category. You know, when the team brought Compton back, someone speculated that, you know, this is a, why don't you have, you should have had that spot go to an undrafted linebacker that maybe was up and coming. Well, this isn't the year where you do that. This is a year where you're looking more for experience and for sure things, and it was harder for those guys to stick. So I think having experience in the system, having experience in the league was very important for some of these back-end positions.
Last thing, Jim, Steven Gostkowski will be the opening day kicker for the Titans. What do you think of that move? What do you make of the whole kicking situation? You've covered this team for a long time. You know, it's been a real luxury. Punting and kicking is really subjects we've barely had to talk about for two-plus decades. I mean, they have had a real luxury at those positions with good kickers and punters. That was not the case last year. His history is fantastic. You know how solid he is, but he went through hip surgery last year. Well, how do you think this is going to play out in your mind?
Well, it's crazy how that all worked out because, you know, I had him on the video conference call yesterday, and he, you know, as you guys know, he bought a home in Franklin. He was living up in the Northeast after, you know, being waived by the Patriots. I think he spent a lot of time in Rhode Island. You know, they were trying to figure out, you know, they were looking at different options on what they wanted, the family wanted to move. His wife is from Memphis. He played at Memphis. His wife, you know, started looking at houses in the Nashville area, and they had moved here without even knowing that the Titans job was going to be opened up. Obviously, I think if you're a kicker and you're looking to looking to get back in the league, you're kind of surveying what's going on around, you know, the NFL. And I'm sure he realized the Titans had a guy in Greg Joseph who came at the end of last season and then, you know, signed an undrafted kicker. And, you know, I'm sure he thought, okay, this is something that could open up, but that's not why he moved here. So he moves here. Titans obviously, you know, weren't convinced by their kicking competition in camp. You know, he's the perfect guy to come in here. If he misses, I think I've heard, you know, Dave McGinnis say it. I mean, if he misses a kick, it's not going to be because the pressure got to him. I mean, this is a guy that has kicked in big games. He's he's a pro. I think, you know, listen to him, sounds like his leg strength is still there. His hip is better after having surgery. If you're a team that's going to be in some close games, and that's the way it is usually around the league, you need a kicker you can count on. So I think he was a great get. I mean, I think, again, the familiarity with Vrabel and Robinson helped there. But, you know, I know that those guys, you know, the head coach and GM will sleep better at night knowing they've got a kicker who's done it, instead of keeping your fingers crossed, hoping this guy's going to pan out. And I would thank the team and the players on that team realize that, you know, this is a position now that has been filled by somebody that that we know can do it.
I think I saw, did Greg Joseph land on the practice squad in Tampa? Did I see that right?
I think that's right. I mean, it's crazy, the Titans kick. I think, you know, Greg Joseph ended up on a practice squad. I think Carlos Santos ended up with a job somewhere. I think four kickers. Cody Parkey landed somewhere.
And Suckup is going to be their kicker, right? For the Bucks?
Yeah, is in Tampa. And then Ryan Santoso, who came in, had a stint here last year, he ended up with a job. So, I mean, it was just like a musical chairs with Titans kickers landing, former Titans kickers landing other jobs. But I think of all those ones I just named, I think you got to, you know, I have so much respect for Suckups. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not dismissing him at all. But I think of all the guys I named, with the exception of Suckup, I think you got to feel really good about ending up with Gostkowski. And I hope he does well, and I hope Suckup does well down in Tampa, because I think he's still going to show that he's got it.
Yep. Good stuff, as always.
I wonder if Jim knows where Aaron Elling is.
Oh, I'd say probably
there.
Yeah, maybe a real estate agent somewhere, I guess, maybe.
Could be.
Selling insurance, something like that. We had fun with Jeff
Fisher.
Yeah,
that's a blast from the past. So,
yeah.
That's right. So, and I think he was a week one, made a big appearance in a week one game too. So excited about the season kicking off here, as I know you guys are too. It's going to be a different experience in Denver without fans there. But, I'm looking forward to making that trip and to seeing the season kick off, and hopefully it's a good year.
Good stuff. Hey, thanks for the visit as always. Have a great week.
Okay, you guys too. Thanks for having me.
That is Jim Wyatt. TennesseeTitans.com is where you can find his work. He has a mailbag. You can ask questions. Has been covering the team for a very, very long time. We do appreciate the visit. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Just talk Titans with Jim Wyatt, who covers the team. We'll talk about the Denver Broncos coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll head out to Denver, 6 days away, Monday Night Football, Titans and Broncos. No fans in the stands out in Denver. I was looking at the top five biggest cap hit, like dead money, towards team, the top five players and the teams that have that. And Denver has one of the players on the top five, like taking a bad dead hit, dead money against their cap. And this is on Spot Rack. Is that what we've come up as the official name?
Yes.
Spot Rack?
We got that confirmed.
Okay.
Straight from the source.
We did. Straight from the horse's mouth. So I ask you guys, one, let's just start with who do you think the Denver player is that is costing the Broncos $13.6 million against the cap this year?
Joe Flacco?
Yeah, I mean, that'd probably be my guess.
It is Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, $13.6 million. There are two other quarterbacks, one safety and one receiver.
Well, Tom Brady is one.
Tom Brady is fifth, $13.5 million. So $13.5 million. New England pays, has dead money against Tom Brady. Joe Flacco is costing Denver $13.6 million against their cap. The other quarterback, this is easy.
Cam?
Nope.
Not Cam.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was the obvious choice.
No, it was a horrible contract. Horrible. Just think of bad teams and bad contracts.
Oh, Nick Foles?
Nick Foles. Yeah. A horrible contract. 18.75 against the cap this year for Jacksonville.
That'll sting.
Rough.
18 points, almost 19 million So that is number two on the list. So Flacco was four, Brady was five, Foles is two. You've got a receiver and a safety left.
Well, Brandon Cooks is the receiver for sure, because we were talking about that all summer, the Rams issues with that stuff, with that and Gurley.
$21.8 million.
And I'd say Earl Thomas.
Earl Thomas, $15
million. Hmm. Yikes.
That's, I mean,
Earl Thomas is still sitting out there if somebody wants him.
Yeah.
Maybe
true.
After maybe the post week one where you don't, you don't have to guarantee it?
No Cowboys. Guarantee. Yeah, nobody's going to do it probably before week one, because that, like you said, after they get through week one, you don't have to guarantee any of the money. So if he has another meltdown and keeps wanting to fight his teammates, you can just cut him and no penalty. Somebody will do it after week one.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. So with all that discussion that we just had with Jimmy, and he's always as good as anybody to talk on this day, you know, when all of the everything is shaked out with the roster, at least for the time being, you really look at it. I was curious, especially with the bump you get, the headline you get from Clowney, where that puts the Titans in predictions. And I saw a smattering of predictions. I just was curious. I watched the NFL Network. I watched a little Good Morning Football this morning. I watched ESPN. I looked at some websites. There wasn't a huge bump of Titans are definitely the team to beat in the AFC South. Some people are picking the Titans to win the division, but I see some Texans. I see some Colts.
I see a lot of Colts.
I see some power rankings where the Titans are, 11th, 12th, 15th, somewhere in there. I don't see them jumping up into the top 10 solidly like I thought you might see, which I think is a good thing. I kind of like a little chip on your shoulder. I saw one prediction. I think it was The Athletic has 9-7 wild card again. So can you imagine a fifth straight year of 9-7? I guess I can imagine it because it can happen. But
oh, yeah. But no.
But I think they're better than that.
Well, they should be. Yes. But there's no way to tell how that – look, here's one thing.
We know in the NFL your season can go down the tubes with the wrong guys getting hurt, all that stuff. Factoring that all in, I think they're better than 9-7 this year. I think.
Well, I do too, because I believe that what you have to look at is this team may start out slow. And I know that's something that they've wanted to avoid. They wanted to have a better start. But the way the roster is set up with the unknown pieces of, okay, how's Clowney going to fit in? Is Vic Beasley going to be a factor at all? Are you going to – what are your rookies? I'll lump all the rookies together. What kind of impact are the rookies going to have? Is Corey Davis going to play like a guy that is playing for a new contract, and so is he going to help you? There's all these what-ifs that you feel like, all right, they'll probably work themselves out as the season goes on, so this team is going to be better on the back half, like they typically are, than they are the first half. The problem is, how much can you get out of the first half that's going to help you down the line?
I think it's a great question, and how I would answer that, and Darren, I want to hear what you have to say. I think they're way far ahead from where they've been the last 2 years. They've got questions like everybody has questions at the start of a year. But I think I like where they're starting off from much better this year than I did either of Mike Vrabel's other two seasons, where they had a huge pile of uncertainty. Now it's a little bit more of the secondary guys, the rookies. The roster is to a point where they're not having to have these rookies contribute on day one. So that's a huge luxury. The offense is in such a better place than it has been either the last 2 years. The defense with the boost from Clowney, and I do think it's going to take time to get Clowney up to speed, in shape. I just think it's unreasonable to think he can give you more than, a pack. I'm seeing 20 plays, 30 plays maybe. That might be the smartest way to go, not ask for too much too soon. But over time, I think hopefully he'll get there. And they're conditioned to get better. They know how to get better during the course of the year. They know they have to, and they've done that before. But I think they're starting off in a better place.
Well, I think they have the luxury of having two road games in September that I think would be extremely difficult if we were under normal circumstances, and I think that can only be advantage to them. I mean, they obviously went out to Denver last year, and it was their big egg of last year's regular season. It was their worst game of the year. Now, Mariota was the quarterback, but that's a tough, you know, the altitude. How many times have we talked about it? You've got the deal with the altitude, and it's going to be Denver sells out their games, especially the first game of the season on Monday Night Football. That would have been a loud crowd and a difficult atmosphere to win and take that element completely out of the mix, and that is a huge favor for the Titans. That is a huge advantage to not have that crowd. Now, they still have to deal with the altitude, fans, no fans. You still have to deal with that. But to not have to go to Minnesota and Denver, two difficult places to play on the road, and to know that there's not going to be any fans in the stands. And, oh, by the way, hopefully the Titans will get the opportunity. Hopefully they've been beating down the door of the mayor's office, suggesting that they get a chance to have fans in the stands in the month of October when you've got two huge games to start the month, Pittsburgh and Buffalo at home. Those are two monster games. If you can get some atmosphere, how much of an event? You don't need that for Jacksonville. Look, you're going to beat Jacksonville, whether you played that game over at Innsworth or at Nissan Stadium with fans or without fans. It doesn't matter. You can play it in a parking lot. They're going
to
beat Jacksonville.
Well, you hope so, but this team has a history of losing to teams that they have no business losing to, namely quarterbacks they have no business losing to. So
it's not happening in week two. They're not losing to this sorry Jacksonville team. You can take that to the bank. It's not happening. They will not lose to Jacksonville in week two. Not going to happen. So, you know, I don't think a slow start should be something. When you say they could get up to, I think they should be get out of the business of slow starts. Like, I get it. They turned it around last year, but because of that, because you don't have, I would say under normal conditions, yeah, expecting huge success. To me, going to Denver and going to Minnesota, I think the best case scenario is a split. If we're talking about normal conditions, I think you'd sign up for that. But considering you take that huge element out, there's no reason. I'm not saying they are. I'm saying there's no reason. While it's crazy to think that they could go 2-0 in that scenario, well, I don't think anybody would predict that. And not that it couldn't happen, you know, with sold out games. But I would say it would be highly unlikely that they would go 2-0. In those two road games under normal conditions, 1-1 will probably be the best case scenario. Where under these circumstances, why couldn't they? I mean, they're better than Denver. Let's be honest. You know, Minnesota. You can make Minnesota's a good team. Like, they're better on paper. They're better than Denver.
Yeah,
are they not?
What
I think so. I thought
Titans?
That last
yeah.
year when they got shut out 16-0. Though, there's always that X factor, especially at the beginning of an NFL season where you're still trying to feel each other. I could be totally wrong. I just try to look at the Titans compared to what I saw last year and the year before. They just look more solid at more positions. The roster is more mature. There's better role definition. People know exactly what they're supposed to, what's expected of them. There's a little shuffling on defense, but I think by and large I still see good definition and good material for success. And I'm really excited about the offense. I want to see if the offense – I don't expect them to be as red hot as they were, but I just think they're going to be more consistent over the course of the season, where for, you know, for 2.5-3 years, if they were out of the bottom 10, you know, it was a story, right? They were struggling to get out of the bottom 10 for a large portion of the last 3 years, even when they were a 9-7 team. I think they've graduated out of that.
Yeah, and I think the biggest question that this team has had for, let's be honest, the last few years, and it's still a, okay, can you do it again? But they've answered the quarterback question. You know it's Ryan Tannehill. There is no okay, could he lose his job? It's Ryan Tannehill, for better or worse. So I believe that takes a little bit of pressure off.
Well, there was not questions on whether Mariota was going to be their quarterback. That was not in question.
But there was a question.
First
no.
3 years,
when was he going to? Was he going to play at his best for more consistent periods of time? Which it didn't happen. The combination of the injuries and the inconsistency, he never got up to that level that we thought. At least I thought that he would.
No,
but
no,
now the question for Tannehill is not he doesn't have to play as well as he played last year. I think that's a little bit unrealistic, but he seems to be a fit. And I think there's good pieces around him to where if he's just steady, that should be a better than average offense most weeks. And I think if you hit it big, you can have a really, really good offense. Again, you got a good line. The wide receivers are so much better as a group than they were 2-3 years ago. They've just steadily gotten better there.
You're going to need them to put up some points early on, though, for that defense to gel and you know, because I have faith in the defense that the defense is going to be fine. I just think they're going to need some time because of the new pieces that we've talked about. So if the offense can help them out there, put up some points, then, you know, through the first four games or so, it should be all right.
We'll go out to Denver to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.